Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.24. They won the Big Ten title. Let's focus on that. It's nice. It doesn't happen that often. Let's focus on it. So the important thing to remember is that Michigan did indeed win an outright Big Ten basketball championship in the second year of Juwan Howard. I think people are losing this in the forest. The trees, they're looking at some trees. One of them is shaped like Tom Izzo and sucks. And one
not a tall tree.
Okay, a shrub. One shrub, one tree. And obviously the Illinois tree is like a redwood. It is a very large, large tree.
That's a big tree.
And people are a little bit disappointed in the way the season ended, but also they won an outright Big Ten championship in year two of Juwan Howard with a roster that doesn't look like an overwhelming roster, right? It has a mid-first rounder in it. And Franz Wagner has Livers, who's a guy who's a very efficient senior, but they don't have overwhelming talent and they still won the best league. And I think the history of KenPom this year. So that's good. And we are excited about it, everybody.
Yeah, no, legitimately. I mean, I know the season kind of came to a rocky finish there, but try to remember it on the whole is what I'm going to go for to start this off. Because, like, it is remarkable. Nobody was picking this team, you know, other than certain partisans to finish top four in the Big Ten this year, let alone compete for the title. And to finish where they did speaks a lot to Juwan Howard's ability as a coach, I would say.
Yes, sir. So I'm Brian Cook. This is the MGO Blog Podcast. My co-hosts are...
I'm Bay Sandbender.
And I'm Seth Fisher. And can
and
I talk about our sponsors? Yeah.
Outright champions. Our sponsors.
Great. We want to thank Underground Printing for making all this possible. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the beginning. Check out their wide selection of officially licensed Michigan fan gear at their 3 store locations in Ann Arbor, or learn about their custom apparel business at undergroundshirts.com. Let's also not forget our associate sponsors, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, The Bow Store, Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, and Raw Power App for iOS by Gentlemen Coders.
All right, so we have 3 games to cover this week, and since two of those games are a back-to-back against Michigan State, we are going to handle them in one segment. The first one at Chrysler is a 69-50 victory as I already said, Chrysler. The second is a 70-64 loss at the Breslin Center. Obviously, going 1-1 against Michigan State is pretty frustrating. But to me, like, you go over the highlight film from this game, the second game, and just all of their makes are like from 18 feet. Not literally true. Felt literally true.
I mean, I don't know if you have to go much beyond Rocket Watts to just discuss this game in its totality, because the dude goes 8-for-14 from 2, and only one of those makes is a layup. He scores 21 points. That's the most points he's had since December 4th against the University of Detroit, and the most points he's had in the interim was 13.
And he goes 7-for-11 in the mid-range. And, like, that's not, like, jump hook mid-range, right? It's all off-the-dribble pull-up shots from 15 to 18 feet.
Yeah, this was like Kawhi Leonard all of a sudden showed up in the body of Rocket Watts. And that was not what I think anybody anticipated, including Tom Izzo, because Rocket Watts did not start this game.
Do you remember the Minnesota game where Isaiah Washington is just killing us in the mid-range?
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah Washington. And that's just what this game felt like. I mean, Michigan obviously didn't play very well. There's some things that they needed to clean up and just be better at. And they needed Hunter Dickinson to do better than 4-for-10 from 2 against this post defense. But, you know, I feel like if you're looking at the reason this game went the way it did, it's really just we took a lot of random independent trials and the coin came up tails way too many times.
Yeah, I called it a Michigan hockey weekend. because I thought some of the bounces kind of went correct in the first game, and in the second game, enough of them. Like, so if you like average them out over the weekend, you'd have like a just nice, easy Michigan couple 8-point victories or something.
But. Score back to backs on aggregate.
So, well, I guess we'll finish talking about this most recent game first. So Dickinson puts his first shot off the side of the backboard. Ominous. And until late in the game, when Wagner can hit him on a couple of pick and rolls, like he just doesn't have the back to the basket dominance that he did early in the season against a team that he really should. This isn't Kofi Coburn he's going up against. Thomas Kithier did not make an appearance in this game. But even like, I mean, you're going up against Julius Marble, right? You're going up against Joey Hauser, Marcus Bingham. Michigan is not the team that they were earlier in the season if Hunter Dickinson is putting 12 points up on 13 shot equivalents.
Yeah, it does feel like he's hit a bit of the proverbial freshman wall, because, I mean, even without Eli Brooks out there, and we'll get to that, it's not like the shot quality that he was getting was particularly poor. He's getting a lot of these shots in, you know, the same deep position that he was getting for before. He's still working for a position well. It's just, you know, whether it's teams figuring out that he's going to go to his left hand probably 80 to 90% of the time, or sitting on kind of the couple moves that he has in the post. Or if it's just that, you know, the longest season that he's played, I believe, in his life is starting to get to him. You know, especially with the gauntlet of centers you face in the Big Ten, you know, something has, you know, worn him down a little bit, and you hope that, you know, maybe this little bit of a break before the Big Ten tournament will provide a chance to kind of reset himself a little bit and maybe go into the film room and look at a couple things that teams are maybe overplaying.
Yeah, and you've got a situation where he's picking up fouls at a higher rate than he did before, and I think that's in part because Michigan is switching him on to guards a lot. So they've decided that that's an acceptable strategy to defend pick and roll. And Dickinson is picking up about a foul per game where he's trying to close out on a jump shooter who's shooting from 15 to 18 feet. And then he's just in this mode the rest of the game where he's kind of looking over his shoulder for the next foul call. And it feels like, you know, he's less aggressive on offense because he doesn't want to pick up a personal, and he's not quite as effective on defense. And so he only gets 26 minutes in this game because he picks up 4 personal fouls. Austin Davis fouls out in 14. And I was, you know, I put up this post today and I was like, I was curious about what Austin Davis's on-off splits looked like. I thought they were going to be pretty ugly on defense. I had no idea.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart that you posted and I did not realize it was that bad either. I'm going to be honest. It's, it basically turns Michigan into, I can't even use Iowa's defense as the example anymore. Ohio State's defense, which is worse than Iowa's right now. It's, especially with the way Michigan plays, most of the time you need a rim protector in there, and Davis just is not a rim protector. And he's also, you know, not able to do some of the things that they're asking Dickinson to do. So I don't know. I mean, we know his limitations by now. That's pretty well-worn ground.
Yeah, but he comes in and he has a couple moments against Luka Garza. He's still an effective offensive player. And so you're like, I mean, maybe this is workable. And then you go in and you look at the on-offs, and Michigan's defense is 0.26 points per possession worse with him on the floor. It's probably a little bit of 3-point luck in that, but also there is a 12.4% difference in 2-point defense, which is the largest I've ever seen. I remember when Joey Brunk transferred from Butler, we were making fun of Indiana.
Yeah, we were pointing
at 10-point gap. And it's just...
And also that the offense falls off with him out there by 5 points on 2-point attempts, and is actually getting propped up a little bit by some 3-point luck when he's on the floor. So the trade-off that you think you're getting with Big Country isn't necessarily happening right now. And I know particularly against Michigan State size, I was kind of hoping to see more Brandon Johns at the five. And we didn't see that. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a situation where we talked about how Michigan doesn't exactly have overwhelming talent, and that's part of it. And so even during this season, there are many points where I'm looking forward to being like, okay, Hunter Dickinson picked up 2 fouls early. Here comes Musa Diabate.
Like, yeah,
that's going to feel a lot less dangerous to Michigan's status in a game. So you mentioned Eli Brooks. Eli Brooks goes down 4 minutes in. He'd already collected 5 points. That looked bad. Like, he couldn't put any weight on it. He did come back in a walking boot kind of later in the game. He just innocuous basketball play where he comes up for a shot. Bingham turns around for a potential rebound, and he lands on Bingham's foot. That, I mean, he's not going to play in the Big Ten tournament. That's for certain. Like, there's no way. And then, is he going to be available for the NCAA tournament?
You hope so, but it's certainly no guarantee.
If I had to guess.
I mean, you look at the, you know, there's two games now where Eli's been out, and they're both, like, absolute offensive clunkers. And you're like, you know, we were making fun of, like, oh, is Eli Brooks the most important player on this team? Because there's so many important players. But, like,
we were making fun of that. I brought up his, like, he is subtly one of the better defensive players in the league. And
anybody who's watched Michigan's offense when he's not out there knows how important he is to that whole situation. So, yeah, I mean, the good news is I thought Zeb Jackson looked more comfortable in this game. On both ends, like, I mean, I think he has progressed, but the problem is that he's not a shot creator. He's not a creator of offense for other, like, he was comfortable in that he could keep the ball moving in that offense, but this was not a situation where, you know, he's obviously not Brooks on both ends, where Brooks is a coach on the floor in a lot of ways and directing traffic, and you're just not going to get that from a freshman. So it's going to be a really tricky situation to navigate if he's not out there, because you're already hurting for depth at guard. If Franz Wagner continues to scuffle as a shot creator, then they're in deep trouble.
I was more disappointed than you were, I think, in Zeb's defense. And I also noticed that, like, when he's out there with Austin Davis, you just can't, like, they can't play that zone switch that they do. I don't think that he's kind of picked that up yet. And so it exposes Austin Davis more. And I think that Michigan State picked up a lot of points.
That's an Austin Davis problem and not a Zeb Jackson problem.
I think they can hide, like, Davis more when the guards can be more switchable, maybe.
Did you look at the on-off numbers? Because most of them are without Zeb Jackson on the floor.
I was just doing observations, and I didn't feel very comfortable with Zeb Jackson on defense.
I thought he was fine on defense, but yeah. having a guy who plays 8 minutes and doesn't take a shot places kind of an extra burden on the rest of your offense.
Yeah, and he has one assist, but it's more of the, like, keeping the ball moving variety than the, like, you threw a skip pass or something.
The assist was he actually had a hesitation move and drove to the paint.
That's right.
Livers. Yeah. So that was actually a nice play. That was Livers' only three of the game, unfortunately.
Yeah.
32% on looks that were not as good as they have been in the past, just because Michigan State wasn't doubling the post as much. But, you know, kind of feel like if you had those looks again, they'd probably shoot a little better than that. You know, they shoot 50% at the rim in this game. Michigan State shoots 50% on other twos. So it's just kind of like, you just kind of throw your hands up and you're like, fine, this was a stupid game that we lost.
When Josh Langford is killing you with a dagger three at the end, it's just not your night.
Yeah. All right. The other game against Michigan State, much more pleasant, a 69-50 victory in which Franz Wagner puts in 4 of 6 threes. Michigan State is held scoreless from behind the arc, and they go 10 of 31 in the mid-range in this game. So it's, you know, you just,
that's a story.
I mean, that's it. That's it. They go 10 of 31 in the mid-range, game over. You know, Michigan turns it over a little bit too much, but, like, it's pretty much dead even on the boards. It's pretty much dead even everywhere except for the fact that Michigan hits some threes, and that's it.
Yeah, Michigan's offensive output in this game is actually only 5 points per 100 possessions better. It felt better just generally when Hunter Dickinson goes 6 of 8, you feel better about things, although 6 turnovers less so.
Yeah.
But I mean, that also different route to that, those points in terms of you get some bench minutes at the end. That also convinced Michigan State fans that they should play a lot of Jack Hoiberg and Matty Sissoko in the second game. And we actually did get a Jack Hoiberg appearance, and he finished with a positive plus minus, and I want to die, but that's another subject. but no, this, I mean, offense definitely ran smoother in this game, even though you get to kind of a similar finish in terms of point total, and then the defense was just so dominant that it felt like Michigan State was going to have to hit a bunch of BS in the next game for them to pull anything out, and that's
what happened.
Yeah.
So you guys are having a nice discussion about the second half of that game, but I just remember whistles upon whistles in the first half.
Oh yeah, it was quite the ref show in the first half. Like the ref show to the point where you're like, these calls on Marcus Bingham are bulky.
It was definitely going both ways.
Yeah.
And Bo Borowski, who's also was then involved in one of the worst ref shows of the year in Iowa, Wisconsin this weekend. And Kelly Pfeiffer was also involved in that. We had Rob Kuhneman in this game instead of DJ Carstensen, which is maybe why the second half was not a total debacle like Iowa, Wisconsin. But Big Ten officiating is not good.
I feel like college basketball officiating is in a fairly good spot. And then we've had a couple of kind of stinkers lately. There were a couple calls in this most recent game where I was just like, what? Like there was a charge that Mike Smith took at midcourt that they just ignored, and then Watts went and got a bucket. That was the one bucket he got at the rim.
I think block charge is a debacle that like needs a rule change because the college officials just are not equipped to call it consistently, and that's become very, very clear. But also, like, we are just getting some incredibly choppy game. This isn't entirely officials' fault, but some of these rules that get them inclined to go and review everything is really like ruining the quality of a lot of games. And
their fault.
But the thing I'm about to bring up is, which is calling games, and this is one of them, calling games completely different between the first half and the second half. And my ongoing joke with Big Ten officials is you can predict the second half by just calling expecting it to be the complete opposite of the first. And that holds more true than them being consistent.
One of the things that jumps out from the Michigan State game is that Thomas Kithier had 2 minutes. It really felt like more than that.
They were a very impactful 2 minutes. Not in the way that Tom Izzo would have hoped, and that Hunter Dickinson roasted him for, I believe, 7 points in those 2 minutes. And it was all just, we're going to post him up. He is going to make you look like a child, and you're probably going to commit a foul on the way down kind of stuff. And that was fun. I really enjoyed those 2 minutes that really, for Tom Izzo and Thomas Kithier, must have felt like an eternity.
It was the one thing that stuck out the most from that game. Like I was also surprised they didn't. It was only a couple minutes, but yeah. I wanted to bring up something on the officiating real quick. I was mentioning it earlier in our Slack chat that if you look at now KenPom's rankings of officials really do not make any sense.
I don't find any value in that. That's just
that they're like that they're refereeing game after game after game.
Yeah, I don't like.
These have been problems for years. Officials have been taking on very heavy schedules for years. We used to talk about officials that seemed to show up every night long before the pandemic season.
Officiating problems are not exactly new either.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think the schedule has had any impact on officiating stuff. I don't know how it explains how they officiate games totally different between the first and second half. I don't see that being a I'm tired thing. That's a referee problem that's been going on for a long time. So I don't know. We don't need to talk about refs much for this one. This was a blowout.
All right. Well, let's take a break, come back, and have a lot of fun talking about the Illinois game.
<laughs> 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGoBlog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Win 76-53, Michigan's worst offensive output of the season. And this felt different than the Michigan State loss, right? The Michigan State loss was just Michigan State hitting a bunch of shots that nobody usually hits. And this was an alarming sort of, okay, you can really get some work in against Michigan if you have a guy like Kofi Coburn, because Michigan doesn't have anybody who can really attack him and drop coverage. And he's big enough to dissuade a roll. He's big enough to play Dickinson one-on-one. You know, Dickinson goes 1 of 8 from the floor in this game. Coburn actually gets up to 6 of 10, but I think a lot of that work was done in 13 minutes against Austin Davis. And, you know, this game starts out and neither team can really find anything, right? Coburn and Dickinson are proving that they're pretty good defenders on each other. Nobody can get a good shot there. I mean, nothing really opens up until Andre Curbelo comes in and he is able to roast Michigan's backcourt and get to the rim.
Yeah. I mean, there were kind of two things here. One was just, it did feel like, you know, freshman Hunter Dickinson kind of ran into sophomore Hunter Dickinson in a lot of ways where, I mean, Coburn is the kind of the meatier version of Hunter Dickinson right now. He's really freaking good. And even though, as you said, neither of them were really hitting much when they were going against each other, Coburn's ability to kind of erase Dickinson as a rim protector by just taking all of his attention really opened things up for Curbelo and some drives for Trent Frazier, who also hit some pretty absurd three-pointers late in this game. But Curbelo especially, I mean, the other thing in this game was just Michigan's guards' inability to stay in front of him. And obviously that's exacerbated when you don't have somebody at the rim who can kind of pull you out of the fire a little bit. But the frequency with which Curbelo got to the 10 was alarming. And I mean, this is a, you know, a top 50 recruit who's got a lot of explosiveness. So he does this to a lot of players, but the frequency with which it worked was definitely a red flag. I would say that the good news for this as well, it kind of felt like a blueprint game in some ways. Not a lot of teams have a Kofi Coburn, So yeah. That is the one part that makes me feel better about kind of the game plan that was laid out here. Yeah, I mean, we immediately saw, you know, Michigan State could not turn around and replicate that because they just do not have that center situation at all. So, you know, this raised some red flags, but there are issues that only certain teams are going to be able to exploit.
Yeah, and they're able to completely shut off Michigan's flowing ball movement in their offense. So they have a total of 4 assists in this game, Michigan does. And they don't have to double the post, so Michigan only gets off 7 threes. And Trent Frazier and Miller and DeMonte Williams and Curbelo are all way overplaying the perimeter. So Michigan barely gets into their action. So by the time they get something going, there's 15 seconds on the shot clock, and a lot of their possessions devolved into isolation. So they weren't able to back cut that. They weren't able to exploit the fact that the perimeter was being massively overplayed. And that's something that I think you might be able to work on. Like, that's a thing where, all right, what happens if we get some extremely athletic players? How do we Princeton these guys if they're going to do this to us?
Yeah, because this was also really the first time that they saw a defensive team be able to pull off a game plan like this against them. So it's understandable that they were a little overwhelmed by, wait, like, you can single cover Hunter Dickinson and overplay the perimeter and still have the defenders to recover and play at the rim. That really obviously, you know, screwed up Michigan's offense for 40 minutes and really produced their worst game of the season offensively. But it does feel like something where if you incorporate whether it's more off-ball motion, some more five-out stuff, where maybe you've got Hunter Dickinson working more at the top of the key, doing dribble handoff type stuff, that at least pulls Coburn away from the basket a little bit, or whoever's playing center against you in this game. Something where you know, you're doing a little bit more to mess with the defense than what Michigan was doing, where it was really just breaking down into iso ball. I do think this is something that, you know, if Michigan plays Illinois in the Big Ten tournament, we'll see a markedly different approach.
Yeah, and then the other bad thing in this game is they got crushed on the defensive boards. Like, it ended up being 36% of Illinois' misses, but for a big chunk of this game, it was hovering close to half. And by the time Michigan started actually defensive rebounding at a decent rate, the game was over.
Yeah, I kind of felt like this game was over so fast that, like, some of that just almost was like, the air went out of their sails. So it's like, okay, well, how hard are we really trying at this point?
I mean, the thing that stands out to me from that is just how, like, holistic the defensive rebounding breakdown was, because this was not Kofi Coburn grabbing 8 of them or anything. He only had 2. Jacob Grandison, who's 6'6", actually leads them in offensive rebounds with 3. And they end up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players to pull down at least one offensive rebound. So that's just, like, it does feel, I mean, I think Michigan also broke out a little bit of zone in this game and had some trouble with that. And the zone has been pretty bad on defensive rebounding in general recently. But I'm hoping this was, I'd like to say this was a one-off, but Michigan also has struggled on the defensive boards a little bit against Michigan State too in the last couple of games. So we'll see. It's a concern right now.
Well, I mean, they gave up a couple of, a number of offensive boards in the state games, but like, it's like 7 versus 8 in one game, and it's like 9 and 9 in the other. And there's a little bit of a difference because, you know, teams don't have the same number of shots, but I didn't think that offensive rebounding turned out to be a problem in either game.
Yeah. I'm probably focusing on a couple possessions a little bit too much.
Yes.
Those will stand out.
I remember a couple of those. That's true.
Yeah, it just feels like they haven't been locked. I mean, it doesn't feel like Dickinson has been as dominant on the defensive boards as he was before, and also he just hasn't been playing as much.
Yeah,
he barely played half the game in the Illinois one. Just, you know, it was that third foul he picked up. because you're about to get like some time like without Kofi, and you're like, okay, you know, this was our like our chance to come back. And then he picks up that little one away from the basket. It's just like, and away from the play. And it's just, okay, that was it. After that point, I felt like the whole thing was just not going to happen.
Third foul from Karstensen, which is on an offensive rebound, a rebounding opportunity where Georgi Pashanishvili is nowhere near the ball. And you're just like, come on, man.
Well, one starting center picked up his third foul. So you know.
Another one's got to do it too.
But not being able to take advantage of the Georgi at center extended minutes was really a brutal way to have this game play out.
Yeah. Yes, sir. All right. Well, that was the fun part of winning a Big Ten championship. Is complaining about it a lot.
I mean, they literally did the minimum that they needed to do to get the Big Ten championship.
Ah, the old Brian Cook in high school algebra move. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, look around the conference.
Do you want to do hot takes here? Or?
Oh, I suppose so.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGO Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
Yeah, there it is. Turn my voice up in the top a little bit. Feel good to be back. What's up, Ochenta? Yeah. Ha. This is Black Dante in your headphones. Speaker box, radio. Come on, hometown. Break down a little history for you. Murder Broadway, Roosevelt Project, Monster Project. Listen, I stepped on the field from no league, just home team. I jumped out the stands and I snatched the rock. With the final seconds dwindling on the clock, most post up to throw up the tie-breaking shot. I put it through the net and let the world's jaw drop.
then fled the arena before they called cops. Tell the players and the coach I wasn't trying to blow spot. The way they was ballin' made it difficult to watch. I was taught when it's something you could change around. Keep quiet, you got nothing to complain about. You got work to do. I don't know if that worked for you, but that's how most work you do. And my work is personal. I'm a working person. I put in work. I work with purpose.
Ace, I need takes so raw they look like Tom Izzo's face. Seth, I need your rawest take.
You just ruined it. Illinois deserves the claim split championship.
What?
I almost cursed. And directly at you. Push off, Seth.
Dude, I mean, we're 14-3.
The rules were laid down. I don't even want to hear it. We've already heard it.
16-4 versus 14-3. Well, their reasoning is
take. I'm not letting this go off.
their reasoning is so their reasoning is dumb. Like they've got more wins, blah blah. But I'm saying like if Michigan played three more Big Ten games in this Big Ten, and this Big Ten is basically like the Sweet 16, right? Like if you played
the games were against freaking Northwestern and Penn State and Indiana, Michigan goes 3-0, and we can all shut up forever.
That would have been fun. And it's stupid that they're even complaining about it, especially after the Big Ten said it is. So Illinois should shut the hell up. But I think they kind of have a case. They kind of, I mean, we're 82%.
No, yeah,
they're
80%. Let's move on. Brian, cue me.
Ace, I need your raw steak.
Michigan State is going to throw their game against Maryland so they can preserve their 500 record against Michigan this season. There, that's a raw take for you.
That is a raw take. How would you even tell? Would they take a bunch of mid-range jumpers?
That's going to be the difficult part, is we do not know. I mean, the tell is going to be that Jack Hoiberg plays in both halves.
I see. All right.
My raw take is Juwan Howard did a better job this year than he did in 1992 and 93.
Strong.
So that
he was a very good basketball player.
He was a very good basketball player. So
and a good coach back then,
regular
too.
Season title.
They went 31-5. They went 15-3 in the Big Ten, but somehow did not win the league because Indiana was number one and went 17-1.
Impressive.
So, but that Big Ten had number one Indiana, number 13 Iowa, number 22 Purdue, and then Michigan was. So this year's Big Ten is a different beast than that Big Ten was. And Michigan went 14-3 in that league. Probably would have gone 16-4 or 17-3 if they had played 20 games. And they're on pace for a one seed. So look at the personnel on the second year of the Fab Five versus the personnel on this team. And Juwan Howard did a better job this year than he did in that year.
We should mention that college basketball has taken a slightly different shape in 2021 than it did in the early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Just in terms of, like everybody on Michigan would have been gone after one year.
Dan Dockage was an assistant coach on that Indiana team.
All right,
That was the level of basketball coaching that people were getting at that time.
Well, I mean, I feel
that
like...
That wasn't the direction I was going, but...
I feel like, I mean, that is a point. But, you know, relative to the rest of college basketball, I feel like Michigan was much more talented then than they are now.
Oh, I have no argument here now, in terms of, like, this team playing over their heads versus the Fab Five. I don't think there's any question.
All right. If you would like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, check out Raw Power for iOS and Mac. It's an advanced photo editor and manager. Raw Power is written by a Michigan grad. It's great with RAWs and JPEGs, works with your Apple library, and adds editing features no other app has. Check it out at rawpower.app. All right, so we have final standings for the Big Ten. We have a bracket. We have a relatively confident number of tourney teams, unfortunately. So nobody is in the last four in Bart Torvik's T-Rankatology. Michigan State is last four by team now, and I don't think that losing to Maryland is going to knock them out. So there really isn't a Big Ten bubble.
Not unless like Penn State makes a real shocking run or something, but that would be shocking. So yeah, it's pretty well established that you've got like what the top nine teams in this league are in, and then yeah, the bottom is a little ugly.
Well, Penn State is actually the team closest to the tournament by Torvik's reckoning, and they're the number 13 team out. So there's really nobody on the bubble.
Yeah, and Penn State, I mean, I think their chances are even getting overstated a little bit because they've just played so few. I mean, they only played 23 games this season. And I don't know, advanced numbers like them just way more than any reasonable person would. I think Indiana has a better chance of getting in with a run, and I don't think Indiana has much of a chance at all unless they get to like the title game and win it.
It's
just not going to happen. That team is quitting. And then your other teams are Northwestern, a swiftly plummeting Minnesota, and an abject Nebraska team. So yeah, there really isn't much of a bubble unless there's some weird run in store for us, which I guess could happen with the top of the Big Ten not looking quite as strong, because you've got, you know, Michigan dealing with Eli Brooks being out, and also Franz Wagner, we didn't mention, but he came up limping a little bit at the end of the last Michigan State game too. But Iowa just lost Joe Wieskamp to what looked like a similar injury to Eli Brooks.
Yeah.
Kind of the worst possible thing that could happen for them in their game against Wisconsin, other than losing Luka Garza. Illinois did get Io DeSumo back, but Ohio State's been falling off. They actually slipped it. They did not end up with a double bye. They slipped behind Purdue. Wisconsin has really been trailing off. We talk about how this top of the Big Ten has been an absolute gauntlet, but at the same time, there seem to be some openings here. If someone wants to make a run, I'm just not sure if there's like a bottom half of the Big Ten team that's capable of it right now.
Well, and I don't know how much the tournament's going to want to let in any more Big Ten teams when they're already obligated to take so many.
I don't think that really factors in, but the thing is, if you look at the seeding, this league is about to get, like, on the bracket matrix and on Torvik, Michigan and Illinois are both one seeds. Iowa and Ohio State are both two seeds. Purdue's a four on the matrix, a three to Torvik. That is five teams that are Sweet 16 protected seeded, although that's obviously not going to be much of a deal this year because everything's in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that the Big Ten has ever pulled off a two twos, two ones, and a three, if that is in fact what happens with Purdue.
I think you'd have to go back to the previous era that we were talking about, and you know, maybe even like the 1989 season to get top of the Big Ten quality like this. 2013 might be in the conversation too. That was a pretty stacked year, but yeah, I mean, the top of this league is really good. It just feels like these teams aren't playing their best ball right now for the most part. Other than, oddly enough, Illinois.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that often gets overrated as you head into the postseason. There's a lot of studies looking at, you know, whether a team being hot factors into their success in the NCAA tournament. And the answer to that is no. But the one thing that would impact that is injuries, and you've got Michigan and Iowa both dealing with them right now.
Yep. And then if you go down the seed list a little bit, you get to six, and that's Wisconsin, and Rutgers is an eight. And then Michigan State is the last team that gets in. Oh no, Maryland's a nine. I forgot. Maryland is a nine.
Maryland's the eight. Michigan State is a nine.
No. In the, they're projected to be a nine.
Oh, projected seed. Sorry.
Which is really something, because
they're actually a team I could see making a little bit of a run, because they've kind of found their identity late this season by playing a lot of small ball with Dante Scott at center. They built up a decent resume by pulling off some wins that people didn't expect them to pull off.
Yeah.
They also lost some games that they should pull off.
You were talking about a team coming off losses to Northwestern and Penn State.
Yes. This is a team that can absolutely explode in any direction, but they do have some impressive wins this year. And if they get past Michigan State, they get a Michigan team that, I mean, we've seen Michigan play without Eli Brooks. It's not pretty. So they could kind of find themselves all of a sudden in, a semifinal matchup without, too much of a, you know, that isn't too much of a stretch to say you could see the Terps make it that far.
I don't know. The two games that Michigan played against them made it seem pretty clear that that was not a great matchup for them.
Sure, but Michigan's first game against Minnesota said the same thing, and then without Eli Brooks, it completely flipped in the other direction.
Yeah, that's true.
It's going to be really weird playing other teams again after, like, you know, this season has just been so Big Ten, right? Like, was it Toledo the last game we played that was non-conference? It's like, I mean, we've not seen anybody play each other, and the Big Ten is so strong this year. It's going to feel like, it's just going to be odd. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the Big Ten just, like, trounces everybody this year.
So, guess who's being projected as an 8? Loyola Chicago.
Yes!
What is, there's like 100% chance they're going to match us with Chicago, right?
I mean, if they can. If they can, they will.
Which is bad, because they are 9th in KenPom.
Yeah, it'd be the worst possible 8 seed to have to face, because that is an Elite 8 quality team that is going to get ridiculously underseeded because of the conference it plays in, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think these days with net having a pretty strong just efficiency margin component that the number 19 and 9 team in KenPom would be able to, like, get up off the 8-9 line, but...
But the Matrix has them as a 9, so that's even worse.
Right, like, yeah, it's like, this isn't computers versus people. People are also putting Loyola Chicago on the 9 lines, so...
Yeah, that's going to depend on how heavily resume ranking comes into it, because that's where that is the anchor to their resume, is that they're 64th in that, on at least projected on Torvik to finish that way. So that'd be the, I mean, because
I mean, are you guys
they play in the NBC?
Are you really concerned if we play them again? Because they still have Cameron.
Yes,
Crutwick.
That's a top 10 team.
They have Cameron Crutwick. Do you remember that guy?
Yes.
Yeah, we played the freshman version. that he's a legitimately good player, and Loyola Chicago is easily the best team that would, I mean, the other projected 8 seeds, I mean Connecticut would scare me a little bit because they've played a lot of the season without James Booknight, but the other two projected are Rutgers and Missouri. I would so much rather face, I mean, obviously Michigan won't face Rutgers, but I would so much rather face a mediocre SEC team than the best MVC team in the country and the best mid-major team in the country outside of Gonzaga.
It is worth noting that Wisconsin beat them by 14, so
that's true.
Makes you feel a little bit better.
Yeah. But
I just have a
feeling. That was early season Wisconsin, though. They were playing a lot better then.
It's true. Yeah, I just have this feeling that we're going to see them in the 8-9.
And I'm going to be real nervous about that game.
Well, I mean, we'd have to win the 8-9 game first, so.
We still have a Wagner, too, which we know is the only thing that can beat a Chicago Loyola Chicago team, so.
Oh man, sister Jean is gonna be a thing again.
Yeah, no, she's still kicking
on Zoom, probably.
Yes, hopefully.
Yeah, let's not.
She probably got like the first vaccine.
I still would not want sister Jean exposed in Indianapolis. That seems like a bad idea.
Hey man, if you gotta go out,
blaze of glory. Do we want to mention that Michigan is playing at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Friday? And then if they win that game, they will get the early semifinal, which would be at 1 on Saturday. All right. So clear your Friday afternoon, or clear your Friday lunch hour, I guess. Take an extended break.
Yeah, do all that stuff.
Don't call in sick. That could get you in trouble these days.
I get to call at work.
All right. All Big Ten. First team.
I haven't thought through this yet. I was going to prepare and everything.
Are you
then
serious?
You
wrote it up.
No, I didn't say I wrote it up. I said I was going to write it up for later this week.
I see. Is Matt Harms on your list still?
No. I mean, I think you get into an interesting discussion with first team center because, I mean, Luka Garza runs away in a lot of ways statistically, but I think Kofi Coburn has a really strong argument because he anchors a top 10 defense in addition to a top 10 offense. And Luka Garza can only do one of those things. And that to me has become the more interesting argument than Io versus Luka for player of the year. Although that also is an interesting argument to me now. But I'm almost looking for a third candidate because
really,
Well, not between, for National Player of the Year, not for Big Ten Player of the Year.
Oh, right.
You talking about Trevion Williams?
Because no, because Io and Kofi split kind of that Illinois best player vote to me a little bit, and it makes it a little bit harder to go with one of them. But I just don't know if there's so I think that opens up the National Player of the Year discussion a little bit. For Big Ten Player of the Year, I think it's between Luka, Io, and Kofi, and I have not made a choice yet. I need to dig down into that more this week. It's a really, really close, tough call. I think I'd actually lean Io for the reasons that I also lean Kofi Coburn over Luka Garza, because he is a driving force on both ends of the floor. I was really hoping that Franz Wagner would come on stronger late in the year so I could push his candidacy, and I will have to stick with pushing his candidacy as Defensive Player of the Year.
Honestly, I think he's got a pretty good case for All Big Ten.
Oh, All Big Ten, absolutely. Okay. I was hoping he had a Dark Horse Player of the Year case by the end.
Yeah, not quite, no. It doesn't have, like, he's 20% usage.
Not consistent enough and not productive enough from a just raw total perspective. But I would, you know, Kofi versus Garza is interesting. Dosunmu is definitely on there. Franz Wagner, I would say, is definitely on there. And then you get down to, like, do you let yourself cheat and put EJ Liddell on there as a forward? Because he is definitely deserving of a first team spot, but this is just such a loaded conference in terms of centers that it's going to be really difficult to figure out kind of that final spot, because, you know, Isaiah Livers has an argument. I'd say Marcus Carr has an argument. Joe Wieskamp has an argument. Trevion Williams would have an argument if he played a different position. I mean, there's a lot of deserving names on here. Dimitri Trice fell off too much towards the end of the season, I think, to deserve consideration, but it's a deep conference.
Yeah, especially at center. So I've seen some All Big Ten teams that have come out, just various people putting there, and they've got three centers on it. I'm just like, you can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna run into some positional things where it's gonna be like those All Big Ten football teams where the entire defensive line is ends. And you're just like, no,
that's
no,
not how football works.
But I will be doing three All Big Ten teams, and all the centers will actually be centers, and I might cheat a tiny bit with the power forwards, but that's about it. As far as it'll go, and it'll only involve guys who could plausibly play some power forward and have this year.
Ohio State plays two bigs together anyway. So
yes, and Kyle Young does play down low enough that I would not feel bad about putting Liddell in there.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think it'd always be more interesting to know, like, what's the best starting five you could put together in the Big Ten than actually, like, who's... Because all Big Ten is, like, who's deserving, right? Like, who had the best season.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's also, like, a completely different list I might come up with, like, you know, if I wanted to make a starting five, that's just going to kill.
Although I think it would look pretty similar to the first team All Big Ten team this year. At least if Liddell makes it.
That does... kind of clarify Kofi versus Luka for me.
It does, because I think it's a clear choice if you're trying to put together the best team, but that's not what Player of the Year is, and that's where it gets dicey. Is that Garza is like a really almost unprecedented offensive force in the conference, but we have also seen the limitations that puts on his team because of his defense. So at the same time, Iowa does not help by surrounding him with other Iowa defenders. So I don't know how much to ding him for it.
There's a lot that is...
He leaves a lot to be desired on the defensive end. There's no question.
Do you know what I just did? I'm on Torvik, and I'm looking at stuff, and I have usage minimum of 16. And I just flipped from best O rating to worst O rating. And guess who's got the worst O rating in the conference? Rocket Watts. Come on.
If you expanded it just a little bit, you would have been able to get Booth Gok in there. Wait, he's at 17.2%.
Yeah, he's at 94. He's 11th.
Rocket Chase. You're doing, I'm looking at conference only, and conference only, he's at 74.2.
Oh my God.
Now Rocket Watts is at 79.1 and is second worst, so that is not making me feel any better. My Booth Gok disaster factory pick really came through in spades.
You know, I think Chase Audige was a pretty good shout as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He did finish with an 87.4.
And the usage, just look at the usage.
At 26% usage. So fair. But man, Booth Gotch, he's got a strongly negative box plus minus and a negative poor Pagatu, which is kind of impossible. He's the only one in the league to do it.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that 24% turnover rate as a 17% usage guy. Awesome stuff.
And different awesome. Colored shoes.
Yeah.
Ace Trey like Galloway those. Was third worst, by the way. I just want to point that out. In the poor Pagatu stat. Trey Galloway, you. Who is the Indiana freshman who looks like Rob from High Fidelity.
Right. Yes. Looks like he got lost on the way to a Model United Nations conference. Yeah. We should roast that guy.
That seems mean. But then again, I just started it. So,
all right, we're going to take a break and contemplate the futures of hockey and women's basketball.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGoBlog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfume for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Element show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
...2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Brush it off. Start all over again. Winners celebrate. You have lost again. So dust it off. Try and try again. Us losers can relate. How we all pretend when we sing along with We Are the Champions.
All right, so hockey and women's basketball have both completed their regular seasons and look forward to Big Ten tournaments. Hockey got a much needed split against Minnesota
that I think locks up their tourney bid. I don't know if they needed to get a split against Minnesota to get in, but now I think their case is absolutely undeniable. So those are two of the top teams in the country. Michigan is 4-4 against them. They have a very recent 5-2 win over them. And, you know, this weekend, I felt it was clear that Minnesota was the better hockey team. They had more zone time than Michigan. They outshot them, I think, 16-6 or something in the first period. But after that first period, Michigan was able to kind of steady things, kind of balance out. Like, it didn't feel nearly as lopsided as that first period the rest of the weekend. It did feel like, you know, Minnesota was going to win a 7-game series. But, you know, given the fact that they are essentially as talented as Michigan, but significantly older, that's fine. Like, if you look at the scoring stats for Minnesota and Wisconsin, they've got a lot of seniors, juniors, and sophomores on the top of their list. And Michigan is freshman.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that Wisconsin certainly deserve to win the league because they're the steadiest team. But if Minnesota had to pick one team they did not want to see in a playoff game, it's definitely Michigan. And I thought this weekend really showed that, like, you know, Michigan's got some skill that can just pop out of nowhere. That Kent Johnson goal in the first game, that was just gorgeous.
Yeah, and he has all of the possible sauces. That is,
including the backhand roof sauce. Apparently,
I mean, like that wasn't even looking right. That was a no look backhand pick out the corner, go celebrate with your teammates thing. And I was just like, damn,
it was real casual too. Like he just kind of flipped it up there. Like that was nothing for him.
Yeah, no, he had one earlier in the year. I think the only goal Michigan scored in the Minnesota series previous, where he just did the same thing. He picked out a top corner from the backhand, but he was at an even sharper angle, and he had kind of gone inside out with his skates. That's the goal of the year, in my opinion. So, you know, if you look at their record, so they're 14-9-1. That sounds a little disappointing, but you have to keep in mind that they missed two games against the worst team in the league, Michigan State. They missed two games against the fifth place team in the league, which is Penn State. And their goal differential is just so massive that you got to figure that they play those games. What's the most likely outcome? Probably 3-1, maybe a sweep.
Score them on aggregate.
and then also that, like, they spent so much of the season just snake bit, right? They outshoot Arizona State 42-12 and they get a tie in that game.
That Michigan State weekend felt very representative.
Right, yeah. So they finally get the breakthrough on the second night and they give up a couple of goals. And it's like, okay, yeah, giving up a couple of goals is a bad thing. But if you play 25 games against this team, they're going to win 22. And
the other three games are going to be real trash hockey.
So it just, the record, I don't feel reflects how well they played. You know, they have that game against Ohio State that Eric Portillo has two of the worst goals I've seen in a long time given up, and they lose that game by one goal, right? So I feel like if you look at the way this team played over the course of the season, it basically met expectations. So no, they didn't win the Big Ten championship. No, they didn't actually come that close, but it was just a weird season. And they missed a lot of guys for the World Juniors for a very critical issue. They've lost Beecher for the rest of the year, which is a bummer. So, you know, on one level, I guess you could say this wasn't the whiz bang year that it was supposed to be. But I'll tell you what, I enjoyed watching this team play more than a lot of other Michigan hockey of recent.
They were a lot of fun. And also, I mean, you know, season's not this is a team that could definitely make a deep, I mean, you know, any team can make a deep tournament run. We're about to enter hockey Plinko time, but
yeah,
this is a team that seems especially set up for, you know, potentially a hot goalie and just hot every skater situation too. Because Strauss Mann's real good.
They outscored their opposition by 1.5 goals per game this year, and they're 14-9-1. So it's, oof, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, the only complaints that you can dig down and find individual things that were disappointing. Like, you know, I want Owen Power to have a slap shot for a defenseman named Power, but other than little things like that are the only real issues I think the team has. Like, I don't know how much is going to stick together for next year, but you know, it seems like they could come back and be ridiculous next year.
Well, you know, I think you're going to get at least some of these guys back, and then they have another wave of dudes coming in. So You don't need everybody back, and you're not going to get everybody back. But unless Michigan just gets absolutely raided, you know, I feel like, you know, next year is the year where they should take off. All right, the women's basketball side of things, how's it going there?
Could have been a better close to the season, to be sure. Michigan did end up securing the fourth seed in the Big Ten tournament, although that is, I guess that wasn't because Ohio, the Big Ten tournament bracket looks weird because it only contains 13 teams because Ohio State did the thing where they self-impose a tournament ban in a COVID year and then don't tell their players until it comes out via FOIA. Oh, that was wild. So it's a kind of funky looking bracket, but Michigan did actually earn a top four seed by beating Northwestern 63-58 in the finale. This was a game where they were really in control for most of it. Northwestern made a bit of a late comeback effort, but Michigan, especially Kenrae Johnson, was really able to ice things at the line. She goes 13-for-14 on three free throws in a game where she was otherwise struggling. It's a nice way for a senior to go out on senior day. But there are, I would say, some lingering concerns here because Johnson goes 2-for-10 from the field. She's still Michigan's second leading scorer, or tied for as the leading scorer with Naz Hillman. And this is just another game where secondary scoring is a real problem for this team. And Amy Dilk's play was not very strong. She finishes with one assist and five turnovers. And that's coming off a game against Maryland that felt like it really showed how far this team has to go talent wise to kind of reach real contention level. Cause Maryland is in a class of their own in the Big Ten. And that's becoming more clear as the season goes on. They jumped out to a 27-13 lead after one quarter and just cruised to an 88-63 win. And this was a game where Naz Hillman is the only Michigan player who can really score with any effectiveness. And Dilk has two assists and five turnovers. The team has 11 assists against 21 turnovers. They just looked overwhelmed against a team that was significantly more talented in every matchup except Naz Hillman's. They're still going to fight for probably a top six, maybe up to a four seed in the NCAA tournament, depending on how they do in the Big Ten tournament. But you can see the ceiling on this team, and the ceiling is probably, you know, getting out of the first weekend might be about as far as it goes. Because once you get into these, you know, real top 8-12 teams in the country, it's just a different level of basketball that Michigan isn't quite on yet.
Well, I mean, it's always been tough to kind of break into that elite echelon in men's basketball just because there's not as much talent to go around. So you get teams like Michigan where you have like the standout star and then they don't have the depth of the top team.
Yeah. And the good news is that recruiting has really picked up the last couple of years, and Michigan is bringing in all three of their commits for next season were nominated for the McDonald's All-American game. They didn't make it, but they were all nominees, which I think puts them somewhere in the top 50-ish in terms of consideration. So Kim Barzarico is bringing in a different caliber of recruit. And it kind of shows in terms of like Amy Dilk was really like the highest level recruit Michigan had in a long time because she was in that lower end of the top 50 level and won Miss Basketball in Indiana. But that's now pretty much, you know, like Michigan's now getting three of those in a class at different positions. And I think that's where over the next couple years, we're going to really see the program develop, because they're just, especially when you see when teams really pay a lot of attention to Hillman and all of a sudden these other players have to hit shots or create offense. There just isn't as much. You know, there's a talent drop off. And I think, you know, as these young players start to develop, we're going to see a more complete team in the years ahead. But right now, this is a team that leans insanely hard on a Wooden Award finalist, which is really cool to watch in Hillman. But when Leah Brown isn't playing at a first team All Big Ten level, this team has a tough time.
All right, so we'll have a bunch of Big Ten tournaments coming up and then some actual NCAA tournament in a March that will not be canceled, probably. So we'll catch you guys on the flip side.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Score everything on aggregate.
Not sure.
Actually, Jay was recruited by Kerry Combs. Went and recruited
came to recruit me to do a benefit for Ohio State. It was for Zach Smith for bail. Again.
I don't know.
So thanks.